Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Just stop by the Crazy Moose Casino in Mound Lake Terrace and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Hewitt has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk. Hope you're having a great day. It is springtime as of today. The weather looks great for the future. It was light out when I got up today. All good things, man. Mariners get a nice win last night. We'll discuss coming up in just a bit. Let's say 7:30 this morning. A little more extended Mariner conversation about a really nice win. Probably my favorite win of the year. We'll do that at 7:30. But, Brock, let's start with what happened yesterday. Seahawks hold voluntary workouts. Russell was there. Bobby Wagner was there. The leadership of the team was there.
Yeah.
Was Earl there? No. I have not seen it anywhere.
No, Earl was not there. I can confirm that Earl was a no-go. He was a N-O-G-O when it came to at least the first day of these off-season workouts. And, yeah, it was encouraging. It was great to see that everybody else, that Bobby and Russ and Doug and I think just about everybody else accounted for. Poor Justin Coleman, you were telling me he couldn't make it, plane, trains, automobiles, canceled flights, weather all over the country. Been a total mess. But, yeah, Earl was, Earl was a no-show. And, you know, unlike, to be honest with you, Michael Bennett or some of the guys over the years, I do have a little bit of grace and a little bit of understanding as to why he's not here. Because he doesn't really know his situation. And he, like Richard Sherman, I think last offseason, was on the trade market. There is no doubt that Earl's on the trade market. So I can't quite hammer him the same way we have some of these other fellas over the years.
Yeah, it's a completely different scenario. This is not feeling like going. This is a message very specifically being sent to the Seahawks, especially if what his wife tweeted was true yesterday. If they actually were on their way to Seattle, but then made it a point not to go to voluntary workouts. I mean, I don't know what more of a message.
Well, and he may be there today. I mean, we'll see whether or not he's going to show up today. We'll see exactly what his messaging is. He's in that Marshawn Lynch world. I mean, he is impossible to read. Those two guys, you know, playing the game the way they do on the field, they kind of carry that over, I think, business-wise off the field in a similar vein. You're just not going to ever put them in a box. You're not going to tell them what to do. And I think with Earl here, there's a whole lot for him and this team to sort out with his, you know, his trade and draft prospects, just 9 days away.
All right, so if Earl wasn't there, and he's already said to everybody that he doesn't know whether he could play the last year of his deal and really commit to the whole thing, does this continue to alter your feelings on what to do with Earl here over the next, 8 days or 10 days? 9 days, I guess it is now, before the draft starts. I mean, you're down to 9 days. Today's Tuesday. The draft's going to be next Thursday. You basically have until Thursday, maybe Friday at the latest, to make a final call on what to do with Earl Thomas right now. He's making it clear that the idea of just come play one more season and then we'll have the leverage and franchise tag him, he's going to try to disrupt that as much as possible. So what does this do to any feelings about what to do with Earl and his value here over the next couple of days?
I think there has to be a very real conversation of what are we willing to live with? What is the number that we are willing to live with? That you do not deviate from your plan. You try to continue, I think, to create as much leverage as you can if you're John and you're Pete and your crew there leading up to draft day. No, Mike, that that until teams are on the clock, push comes to shove, much like the Seahawks QB situation. I mean, they kind of slow played that thing over the last few months. It wasn't until Sunday before that they get their backup from a year ago signed, and the Friday before the Monday that they get Stephen Morris signed or whatever. Steve, you know, so
this goes down to the wire.
I think it does.
I think it happens on draft night
or draft day, or
I mean,
when
we kind of thought that last year with Richard Sherman, and then it ended up kind of falling by the wayside, and you know they weren't able to get what they were hoping to get for him.
But with Richard Sherman in that scenario a year ago, I would say Michael Bennett's in the house, Cliff Averill's in the house, Cam is in the house, Richard's in the house. You have all of these pieces, and let's make one more big old run at this thing. So maybe if you were overwhelmed and wowed by a number over the course of the process, then you pull the trigger. But I think in this case, it's I couldn't put those two in a similar box. I think you have moved on from it. You have made multiple tough decisions. You have turned this thing and gotten younger And you've got to be willing, I think, if you're John and you're Pete and the Seahawks, to say, okay, what ultimately will we settle for? Will we settle for a second and a fourth? Right? Are we just going to try to get something at the end? Or do you try to play it out, hope that Earl has a wonderful year, and then in 2020 you get a third-round compensatory pick for it?
Yeah.
You know? So I don't think, you know, Danny made a strong argument yesterday, and I was sitting there listening to a lot of that and really enjoying their show, and he said just one year of Earl is worth more than a second-round pick.
I don't know that I agree with that.
I don't know how to qualify. I was sitting there.
1 year of Earl a couple of years ago when he was surrounded by all of the talent that you had at the time is probably true. 1 year of Earl now, as you are making your turn, so to speak.
1 year of Earl.
I don't know that it has the same level.
1 year of Earl taking away go routes and post routes and making it a continued growth.
Yeah, but what is more valuable? If you're only going to get that 1 year, what's more valuable, that or finding out whether or not you have his replacement on the roster, or whether or not you need to find it somewhere else?
Yeah.
Look, I agree. Earl Thomas is better than a second round pick.
But in a vacuum, yes. In a vacuum, Danny is right. Earl, for one season, is worth more than a second round pick.
But this doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Never does.
I mean, it's not a vacuum. It's which would you prefer, Earl Thomas for that 1 year doing all those things in a year where I don't know whether they're going to take a step back or not, but certainly you don't have the same incredible talent that you've had for the last 5 or 6 years and the same level of expectation.
Yep.
Or whatever you're going to get back for that you think can help you for the future, plus finding out what you've got in some of the other safeties and whether or not any of them are going to allow you to play your game moving forward.
And then ultimately, if Dallas has worked out every wide receiver, which they have, and ultimately draft day comes and it looks anything like last year. I mean, if you're the Seahawks, you want it to be like last year, where there was an unbelievable run and an overdrafting of every wide receiver imaginable. Mike Williams and John Ross goes number 12. So if you're the Seahawks on draft day, you're probably hoping that Calvin Ridley goes in the top 15, that, you know, some of these receivers come off the board before Dallas picks, and they're sitting there going, oh, my gosh, what are we going to possibly do here? So, yeah, and it is the beauty and the danger of all those judgments they got to make.
Some of these texts come in, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. What is Salk talking about? 1 year of Earl is worth way more than any draft picks. Look, a couple of years ago, I agree with you, and it has nothing to do with Earl's play, although I think that's another conversation. It just has everything to do with where you're at in the life cycle of your team. 1 year of Earl Thomas for a team that is right there with every other contender in the league, absolutely worth more than a second-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
1 year of Earl Thomas for a team that is kind of in between and making that turn, as Pete Carroll said, I don't know whether I can say the same thing. And so I will continue to hope that John Schneider gets something done here in the next 9 days before the draft. All right, and the other thing that happens yesterday, and this goes back to last year's draft, is Malik McDowell's tenure with the Seahawks officially comes to an end, Brock. It's sad for him, obviously, what happened to his life and where he was a couple of years ago or last year.
Yep.
But this is awful for them. I mean, they gave up he was their second-round pick. Then they had to give up another second-round pick and Jermaine Kearse to go get Sheldon Richardson,
correct,
who ends up leaving after 1 year. Which was more valuable, Sheldon Richardson for that 1 year or the second-round pick and Jermaine Kearse?
Yeah.
At the time, I thought it was Richardson because of the where you were in the life cycle.
Yep.
And when it doesn't work out, all of a sudden it looks like it's the other way.
Yeah, these are all of the unfortunate consequences that come off of that decision. A decision, and I think I can stand again confidently on this, where these rookies were brought in after all the minicamps, after all the OTAs, everything else, all the rookies were there. The Seahawks investing so much time and energy and resources and saying point blank, hey guys, this is the most dangerous time of your life. Many of you have gotten paid, especially you draft picks. You've got money in your pocket. Just make sure you make the right choices. Mm. You know, just your judgment has to be on point here. You've only got about 6 weeks. You're going to go home. Your buddy's going to come out. You're going to be able to afford some toys and some things. Just make good judgments. And unfortunately, he did not. And he paid the most severest of consequences. It cost him his career in Seattle. It cost the Seahawks mightily, as you talk about the draft picks and the roster and everything else. And it's just a disaster. A move that I think we saw coming that I don't think is going to blindside Malik or his representation or anybody else. And if he can't play here, I'll be surprised if another team is going to clear him along the way to play. That's a bummer. Bummer on so many.
Are you sure about that?
I'm not sure on that.
I do think that there's the chance that the Seahawks were more cautious with him than another team will be, and somebody else will say, forget it, let's see what happens, and give him a shot.
They could.
Right, because the risk to them is a lot lower, certainly monetarily.
Yes.
And so they just say, all right, well, let's see what happens.
Yes.
Let's give this guy a shot.
Yes.
And I just, you know, we don't know enough. The Seahawks have been very, very, very quiet.
And have to.
about what has happened, and maybe now that he is a free agent and no team is really bound to it, maybe he wants to say, maybe somebody else finds out. I don't know, but I wonder if that changes.
Yeah, and I think they have to be. I think this is important, and people have texted about this. Why have they? But they have to, from a legal standpoint and everything else, and in protecting his medical records. And I think we learned that through Jason Pierre-Paul and everything else, and he went what he went through. They are not going to play that game. So when Malik and his mother and his side wants to talk about this and give all the details, well, then unfortunately, I think we'll hear the rest of the story, and it's not going to make it feel any better.
7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Mariners had a huge series start last night. Nice to come away with a win in Game 1. A dramatic 2-1 victory last night. They did allow that leadoff home run to George Springer, but after that, James Paxton was nailed. Settled in, allowed just two more hits over six innings, and just the one run. Bullpen came in 7th, 8th, and 9th without a problem. What I liked about last night's game, obviously getting a win over the best team in baseball helps, but what I really liked about it was that it was a game that certainly they didn't need to win. They were playing against an ace who had his really good stuff, and Nelson Cruz just used raw strength to club a home run, and they found a way to scratch out another run and support their guy, James Paxton. The bullpen does its thing. It's a game that you don't always win, and that's one of the ones in between, right? The every team wins 50, every team loses 50.
Yep.
This was one of the ones in between. I really like the way it went.
It was a game that had very little margin. That's what the Astros talked about in their post-game commentary. I think the Mariners as well. Like, who's going to make a mistake? Is one of these teams going to give this game away? Are they not going to make a play defensively? Is there going to be a base-running gap? There just was not a lot of margin with the way those two lefties were throwing the pill last night, and there was no mistake. And then once again, Eddie Diaz was just lights out. And, man, when it is solidified on the back end, we saw it a couple years ago with Fernando Rodney in the brilliant year he had here with over 50 saves. And when it is just solid at the back end of that deal and the effect moving it backwards into the 8th and the 7th and the 6th, you feel so much better. And I love the fact in the 8th and the 9th, they had to go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the top of that lineup. Nothing given to them, nothing handed. A game they took, and they took from the World Series champs last night.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, according to Brock just a few minutes ago, Earl Thomas did not report to Seahawks voluntary offseason workouts yesterday that began at team headquarters. He previously had said that he would not play this season on the last year of his current deal, that he couldn't trust himself to go out there and be Earl Thomas. Well, yesterday started that process as he did not show up, despite tweets from his wife early in the day saying that they were on their way to Seattle. So did he come to Seattle and then specifically not work out with the team? Was he just delayed like his teammate Justin Coleman was? Will he go out there and practice today? Regardless, I continue to believe this makes him a more tradable commodity for the Seahawks. Then if Earl is not interested in playing out the last year of his deal, if he wants to create a headache and they can't come to a long-term agreement for him to stay here, then you should get as much value as you can for him. I hope that starts with a first-round pick. But if it starts with a number two, you probably have to get that done as well.
My wife spends an awful lot of time calendaring. I mean, an awful lot of time. You know, color coordinating everything, putting everything on the calendar. So I decided to do a little last night. I realized the Mariners are going to play 148 games in the next 164 days. That's what's on their schedule. And I thought back to these voluntary workouts and these Seahawks players and how important these days are. Do you realize in a 185-day span, beginning January 1st when these guys were off, January 1st of 2018 to July 28th of 2018, that's 185 days. There's only three mandatory days of work. There's only three. And if you want to be an overachiever and go to the voluntary workouts, you're working 35 to 36 out of 185. Go get yourself to work and get better.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Seahawks released Malik McDowell here, their top pick from the 2017 draft, a second rounder. McDowell was selected number 35 overall out of Michigan State. Never suited up for the team after being injured in an ATV accident soon after the draft last year. It's a huge shame, not only for the wasted second round pick last year, but for what they had to give up in order to acquire his replacement, Sheldon Richardson. They gave up Jermaine Kearse, and they gave up this year's second round pick as well, which you'd sure like to have as you head into the draft. So This will go down as one of the big mistakes so far of the Pete Carroll, John Schneider era. They took a gamble on a guy who had character concerns, and just a couple of weeks after they did that, that gamble went completely bust as he injured himself in such a way that he will likely never play football again.
Yeah, making judgments. That's what the next 9 days are about. These are what thousands of man hours go into for the Seahawks staff and their brass as they make a judgment on who they want to bring into their culture. And I'll tell you what, come tomorrow morning at this time, we'll be all making an adjustment about QB to QB. Russell Wilson gets the grand stage tonight. The first of four of these episodes, they were taped weeks ago. It'll be Saquon Barkley tonight filling in the gap for the John Gruden QB camp. And we'll all be watching Russell get to work tonight.
All right, there you go. Three things you need to know every single morning, right, at 7:15. Hey, you know who else looked really good last night? Vincent looked good. That was good to see. But I thought Nicasio had his best outing. I've been real nervous about that guy every time he's been in. And he was nails last night. Just came right in, shut the door in the eighth. Yeah. 1-2-3, let's go.
Springer, Bergman, Altuve.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just a 1-2-3 eighth inning. How are you going to do?
That Astros lineup just keeps coming at you, though, huh?
Yeah.
They just keep coming at you. There are so many landmines to dodge as you're going.
Same with the Mariners lineup, though. I mean, honestly,
true, absolutely.
If you're on the other side of it, yes, you're looking at that lineup. And even right now, as it's compromised with some injuries, probably saying the same thing.
And yet,
thing.
As good as both those lineups are, put a couple of aces out there, and you get a 2-1 game.
And 2 hours, 20 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. That was kind of nice, too, wasn't it? Yes. Kind of nice, 9:30. Like, oh, let's check out of this thing. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys.
All right, let's start here with Earl Thomas, who did not make it to the voluntary workout yesterday, according to Brock. Will he show up at any point? What does the future hold here for Earl?
Well, you have to wonder, it's going to probably be a while before he does show up, because, again, it doesn't necessarily mean that he won't. It's just that more than likely, it looks like he'll probably kind of sit this out until things sort out. And you can understand that because, you know, with the possibility of a trade, all those different things. I mean, it would have been better on his part to be there, show the good service and show that the good faith and all those different things. But I guess under the circumstances, knowing that he wants a new contract, knowing he's in the last year of a contract and knowing this is voluntary, skipping it probably is no surprise to anybody.
So, John, he's under contract, obviously, with the Seattle Seahawks right now for another year. Does that preclude his agents, his representation, from going out there and talking to the Cowboys about a contract extension, or at least the parameters of what, you know, they could put in place?
No, unless the Seahawks give him permission to do that, give the agents permission, that'd be violating, it'd be tampering, and the Cowboys could be vulnerable to lose a draft choice.
Do you think they've given those teams permission? Is that things that become public?
No, I think that you know, they've taken the tack that he's in the last year of his contract, he's under contract, and, you know, as much as they'd like, and they talked a little bit of an extension right around the early part of the off season, but they haven't really done anything in the last month or so. But no, they would not at this stage offer them the chance to be able to do that, because, you know, they're still in the position of saying, hey, we want to keep him, we want to try to eventually get him to a long-term deal. But to my knowledge, there's no way that they've allowed him to be able to talk contract with any other team.
Walk me through a little timeline of how this could go, predict the future here for me. So let's say he does not get dealt by the time the draft ends next week. What happens over the next couple of months with Earl and the Seahawks?
Well, what happens then is that, you know, he either reports to the OTAs or doesn't, which, of course, is still voluntary, no different than, you know, last year.
And what do you think he does? Does he?
I think he probably stays out.
Okay. And then eventually you're going to come around to minicamp. Well, does
then,
he report
then
minicamp, to mandatory
that's
minicamp?
That's where the fines can begin, because now if you miss minicamp, you're subject to a fine. Again, it's not big money. And then you go to training camp, and that's when the fines get big. I mean, you can really lose a lot of money.
But do you think he shows up for those things?
I don't think he shows up for mini camp and debatable on training camp.
So let's say it's 50-50 at best that he shows up at training camp.
How big of a problem?
I mean, we watched him watch his good friend and fellow safety Cam Chancellor go through this and go all the way through two games of the regular season before finally giving in. Yep. Was that a cautionary tale for Earl of how not to do it? Or does he look at it and say, man, my guy did it, and I'm going to do the same darn thing?
Well, it's a waste of time and a waste of money because, you know, once you get, like most teams take the tack, once you get to training camp and you decide to hold out, it's like, well, we're not going to even talk contract until you get back in here. And then usually the guy will stay out and they don't talk contract. And then when they come in, we'll see if they talk contract. But I guess the difference is the longer he would hold out in training camp, the more time they would have a chance to take a look at Bradley McDougal at free safety and Delano Hill at strong safety. That would be the one thing that would happen, and that, you know, could go all the way through the preseason. That'd be where the difference was from back when Cam Chancellor held out, because, you know, they didn't have the kind of viable options to try to fill in. I mean, it's not like the year before when Cam was holding out that they went ahead and tried to use draft choices at the safety position.
Seahawks expect to release Malik McDowell. That's according to Ian Rappaport yesterday. When do you think that will happen, John? And then the second part of that, think the Seahawks claw back for any of his signing bonus?
100% they go back for the money because, again, the fact they put him on the non-football injury list, they cut down his base salary last year, and the fact that he hasn't played, they can clearly go after his signing bonus money, and all those different things. I mean, the second-year base is not guaranteed. I would imagine it's just kind of a week-to-week type of thing. I guess a matter is like when he's going to be in town next and, you know, when he fails the physical. And so it's a matter, I think, again, as Ian Rappaport said, it's going to be probably soon, so it could be a matter of a week or two.
You think we'll ever hear the details of exactly what happened from Malik's side? The Seahawks can't. It's a liability. They do not want to be sued. They don't want to be taken to court. They don't want to risk the opportunity to claw back for any of that. So if the details actually do come out, they'll have to come out from Rosenhaus and McDowell and Malik's mom and everything else. You think we will ever know what really went down?
Well, the only way it will happen is if he plays. If he ever plays for another team, and then he's able to tell the story. I mean, if it continues like it is and he's not able to play, then we'll never hear the story. I mean, it really comes down to his long-term availability to be able to play football, because, again, if he doesn't play football, then he's going to be quiet and not really say anything, and you'll never hear what the story is going to be.
Where does C.J. Anderson end up landing? He had, 1,000 yards as a Broncos running back released. Where does he go?
I think he could be a candidate here because, you know, he's one of 9 1,000-yard runners from the last season. You know, that's how rare it was to get a 1,000-yard runner, and he's a good, tough runner. I mean, he's not the biggest guy, but he's still a very tough runner. I could see, you know, Detroit, I think, showing some interest, maybe the New York Giants, and definitely, I think, Seattle.
Wild card.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
What was the last time you could remember being embarrassed?
Oh, let's see. Probably yesterday somewhere. I think, it wasn't on a speaking thing or anything of that nature. I think one time, a couple weeks ago, maybe I just was in a restaurant and said something crazy. I don't know. It's like it doesn't happen too often because I'm not out a lot. And if you're not out a lot, you don't get a chance to be embarrassed. But I'm sure that I put myself in many ways in a chance to be in some kind of an embarrassing situation.
Brock, when was the last time you were embarrassed?
Yesterday. You got 3 kids. You're going to be, especially a 15-year-old.
You're embarrassed by your kids?
No, but you're going to say something. You're going to do something just stupid. So, yeah. I think actually yesterday when I went to just pick up Titus and I forgot to check in, and I could feel the ire of the front desk making sure very loudly to tell other dads, you need to check in. And I was like, oh, I'm an idiot.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, just yesterday.
All right, John. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
Sounds good. John Clayton with us every day, of course, at 7:15.
You?
Embarrassed? I have to think. I'm sure it hasn't. I mean, I just played you some video of me and my friend singing Oasis in a karaoke joint on Saturday night. That was fairly embarrassing.
Yes.
Yeah. I wear it with like a badge, though, man. At this point, you just run towards it, not away from it.
Yeah, what do you really?
Lydia, I know, is mad at me, and maybe I should be embarrassed because I keep screwing up the lyrics to our favorite baseball song. I can promise you we'll be playing it next on Brock and Salk.
There it is, Distilling Company's BSB Lounge at the ballpark.
When you purchase our award-winning spirits, remember to choke up on it for better control. Then send it down like a trip back to the minors.
You can't spell baseball without BSB.
There it is, Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
Crowd making some noise. Here's the stretch. And the 3-2 pitch, swing and a miss and a slider, strike 3. It's over. Sugar, how sweet it is. A save, his 7th, as the Mariners hang on and beat the Astros 2-1 tonight here at Safeco Field to take game 1 of this 4-game series.
What a night last night. Mariners get another win. climb ahead of Houston in the standings.
Do you think that song will be even better when it's like 75 and sunny?
Yes.
And that 48, 45 breath in the air closed.
I think everything is better when it's 78 and sunny. That song is just one of those many things. So, hey, nice win for the Mariners last night. They give up the leadoff home run. Can we start with the leadoff home run and then get to some of the great things about last night?
Sure.
Because there's a bunch. Want to talk about Paxton. Want to talk about Haniger. Want to talk about Nicasio and Diaz and all the nice Cruz and all the nice things they did last night. But I turned the game on maybe 10 minutes late, like 7:15 I turned the game on. I was eating with the kids, and okay, they're done. They went to go take a bath and stuff, and so I went. I turned on the game and immediately saw, okay, it's 1-0 at the end of half of an inning. And I turned to Heather, who was not listening to me, and said, oh yeah, 1-0 after one. How much you want to bet George Springer hit a leadoff home run against the Mariners? Mm. And she, of course, did not respond and didn't care at all what I was talking
because
about.
Because she wasn't listening.
Not even a little bit.
Common experience?
She wasn't even listening to me a little bit.
She didn't even give you a token, uh-huh?
No.
Uh-huh.
She's like, I don't know what you're saying.
Okay, sweetie, but I'm cooking dinner. I got to get the
Well, she's busy putting the, kids in the bath.
Uh-huh.
And so, of course, I click on the box score on the phone. I'm just like, curse, like, mother, you got to be kidding me. Another leadoff home run.
You cursed at your mother?
Yeah, I said mother. And then George Springer and another leadoff home run. What is the problem? Why? Can I be very clear about something that I would like to see happen? I would really, 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 really. Who's pitching tonight? Miranda?
Yeah, we think.
Even better, as a lefty. Drill that dude right between his numbers, first pitch of the ball game tonight. Mm. Do not give him a chance to keep doing this.
The windup and the 3-1 pitch, swinging a drive deep to left center field, and he has done it again over the out-of-town scoreboard, George Springer.
What was it, 466, they said?
That was his fourth career leadoff homer at Safeco Field.
Dude.
At Safeco Field. Surpassing Grady Sizemore, of course, for the most in that ballpark's history.
Stop pitching to him. Yeah. Hit him directly between the numbers and make him get off the plate to start the game.
Yeah.
And by the way, I don't say this with any malice towards George Springer.
You like the guy.
I told you last week he's one of my favorite players in the game. I think he's awesome. He's a joy to watch play the game. Drill him right between the numbers.
Okay.
Please. Scott. Miranda, anybody who I can tell.
Mel.
Yes, Mel, everybody, if you're listening, please.
Marjama.
Please, please. If you know any of them, please tell them. Drill that guy right between the numbers tonight, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Anyway, all that being said, what a game last night. That's a game you're not supposed to win, and you find a way to do it.
That's a game that you didn't win a year ago. That's a game against that team that has owned you in your building, particularly. What, one winners of five in a row in your place? And it doesn't set the course and trajectory for the entire season. It will mean very little. It, you know, it's momentum's as good as your starting pitcher the next night. But as far as just a team that won those games last year and the year before, and even the year before then, even the year before that, when they were not nearly as talented, it was awfully nice to see you come on the winning side of it.
Biggest reason they won last night was?
It has to be Paxton. It has to be Paxton going six innings. You know, getting through that first, where again, you know, it's just he, Felix, a number of these guys got to start this thing a little faster in that first inning, hopefully find their sharpness and command and everything else. But getting through that first, settling down and not giving up another
run. You're probably right. And I thought service used a really good word to describe what Paxton did yesterday.
He looks forward to his day to work. And, you know, he knows he's very talented, but, you know, it's got to be more than just a talent. You got to go compete. You got to make adjustments. You know, you get in the course of the game, you start to see, you know, his emotions start to come out, which is a good thing. I've always been a big fan of that. When Pax slams the glove or after a big strikeout, and really nice to see him get the win tonight. You know, get that first one under his belt, and hopefully he can build from there.
I like that word, compete. And I thought they did that really well last night. They competed in a game, hung in there with the best team in the baseball. And found ways to kind of chip away, right? You get the home run from Nelson Cruz, which is just his raw power and ability to muscle a good pitch out of the park.
An image I will have forever, and I'm glad we all got to experience it together, was when Kyle got scared in the batting cage. Like, legitimately, it's not just birds and eagles and owls and everything else to scare Kyle. That when we were in there with nets, there were two layers of nets, Kyle. There was the nets in the hitting cage, and there's actually another level of protection, and you wanted no part of the violence.
It was violent. It was scary. It was intimidating.
Yes.
It was like, this just feels like a dangerous place to be, so why would we voluntarily be here? Let's move.
And we did, and you did, because when that guy makes contact with a baseball, unique things happen.
He's pretty strong.
Here's the pitch on the way, swinging a drive, line drive, deep left field, going, goodbye baseball! Cruz has tied it up! His third home run of the season.
In like four games. Pretty impressive for Nelson Cruz. That's not who I would say, though. As much as I'm with you, Paxton was great, and Cruz, you need the home run. I thought the bullpen was the difference. I mean, you end up in a 1-1 game and then a 2-1 game late against that lineup, and all the ways they've found to come back and beat you and just sort of haunt your bullpen. To see Nick Vincent come in and go 1-2-3, no problem. I thought he looked great, by the way, last night. And then Nicasio, who's been kind of a nightmare so far, I thought he looked the best he's looked all year. You finish it off with Edwin Diaz, who I don't think had his best stuff, but found a way to, again, compete with that slider. Yeah, that's how you end up be winning a nice game against the Astros and starting this thing off right. You're not going to dance with him? Come on, man. I need the wild inflatable arm guy. It makes me happy just to watch Brock games in the morning. Get on a baseball, right? Or is it come on a baseball, Lydia? Which is it? I always forget.
If you're going to take my song and claim it as your song.
It's not my song.
You just called it your song.
It's our Mariner song.
You called it your song.
It's our Mariner song.
I'm cool with you getting it incorrect, but then you got the incorrect name incorrect yesterday. You called it Come On Up Baseball.
Well, that's what I originally thought it was.
No words in the original song title.
But that's what I originally thought it was.
But the on up part you nailed.
Right. Well, so that's probably all that matters.
Congratulations.
All right, hold on. That's what I originally thought it was Come On Up. I thought it was Come On Up Baseball. And now, after listening to it a million times, I understand that it's Get On Up Baseball. But it took me a while to figure that out. And so sometimes I go back to my original reading,
right,
which was Come On Up Baseball.
Come On Up Baseball sounds so boring. Like, it sounds like someone's calling someone up at the DMV. Like, baseball, it's your turn. Please approach the
counter
at the
DMV. Come On Up Baseball. Get On Up
Baseball. No, Get On Up sounds way more exciting.
I don't know.
You did make it your song. You just did do that. So this
yeah,
our
can have
song.
Come up. You can have Come On Up Baseball. That's yours.
Then you're just bequeathing it to me.
I kind
of
like
it's my second favorite song of the day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's one other song I wanted to play today, and just very, very quickly, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I just thought if anybody else like me is around 40 years old, not quite 40 yet, but if anybody's around 40 years old, maybe give or take a few years in any direction, especially older, there's a good chance that as a kid, either Thursday nights or on rerun a little bit later, a couple of years later, you watched a tremendous amount of Night Court. Mm. I watched Night Court. It used to be on every day on Channel 56, and I used to watch it every single day for a half hour. Wow. I probably watched every episode of Night Court as a kid. And so when I saw that Harry Anderson died yesterday, huge bummer, man. He was only 65, and he was really funny. I think this is my favorite TV theme song of all time.
Now you've opened the can of worms.
I know. People debate it. And I could probably be convinced another day that it's something else, but it might be number one. It's on my list anyway. I love this song.
Cheers?
I like this better than Cheers.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. How's that?
Wow, that's strong.
It's not as fun to sing along to.
Was Cheers your song, too?
Oh, I mean, obviously, right? Did you name it something else?
What?
He's not listening to us.
Yeah, I'm done with Lydia for the day. She's being mean to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, all I wanted to do was have fun with our song that Lydia found. It's not like we've tried to steal credit.
Right. Definitely called it your song.
No, but it's our song. It's fun. It's our song. When did I call it my song? On the air? Oh, no. I didn't call it my song.
It was Lydia's.
Making that up.
It was Lydia's poem. It was Lydia's song.
For sure.
Oh, no. Okay. I don't want ownership.
Lydia, it is yours. You're all over Safeco Field. Oh, I understand this being played. I get to go to Safeco, I think, tomorrow for a late birthday gift.
Hey, I keep reading people saying that this team is fun or they're surprisingly fun. And, hey, I really like this Mariners team. I'm surprised by how much fun they are to watch. And I guess I'm surprised that everybody is so surprised. Like, I feel like they've been pretty fun with mostly this group for the last couple of years. It's like each game, one new person watches them and is like, hey, this Mariners team isn't the same as it was 8 years ago. Weird.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they turn over a little bit. And Cruz's been pretty fun to watch now for a few years. Cano's been pretty fun to watch. The two things that I think are a little bit new is that you get Haniger healthy again, and he's, I think, really fun to watch. And then just D. Gordon's energy, man.
You think he's really fun to watch, or you think he's just very talented?
I think he's really – I really enjoy him. Like, he's must-watch for me.
Interesting.
And maybe I'm unique in that regard. I don't know. Like, D. Gordon sort of has the energy.
Charisma.
Cruz has the power. Cano has the smoothness.
Diaz has the emotion.
Absolutely. But there's something about D. Gordon and just sort of the joy and energy he plays the game with. He vibrates.
Yes.
He's a little like Altuve.
Yes. And Haniger is just a steady Eddie, man. And he just does not change. He and Paxton, their demeanor through success or failure or anything else, probably a decent comp to be fair between those two guys. Yeah. If Haniger were pitcher, I think his whole demeanor would be very similar to Paxton. But two very gifted guys, and the way he ran that ball down in right center field was an enormous part of Paxton getting that win.
That was a really nice play.
Yes, it was.
I mean, that ball does not have to get tracked down. I mean, if he doesn't get there, it bounces off his glove. That's one of those plays where sure would have been nice if he could have made it.
Yep.
And last year, he didn't make that play a couple of times, right? In fact, I think it was one against the Astros that they ended up losing because he couldn't come up with a sliding catch.
Yep.
And he sat here, Brock, you were out that day. Wassel was in. He sat right here next to me, and we talked about, you know, sort of things he wanted to do better this year. One of the things was, I want to make those plays. Last year, it aided him that he didn't make the play last year that he had an opportunity to do. And this year, you see him come up with that.
He did last night.
That means something to
him. He did, and they're 9-5, and they get the opener of the series and get one more of them, and they're going to continue their streak of not losing a series to begin this season.
And that's why we get to play my song.
Yeah!
All right, Coors Light's Blue 42 will be next. We'll talk some more baseball in 20 minutes with John Morosi of MLB Network. There's a 1,000-yard running back available. He may even still be in his prime. Should the Seahawks be interested? Brock's got that answer next. I'm Brock and Saul.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. And you know what would be fantastic is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
Boo 42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Boo 42. Boo 42.
All right, good morning. We've got a little Coors Light's Blue 42 here. A lot of text messages, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Salk equals Edison, Lydia equals Nikola Tesla. Idea thief.
Mm.
Hashtag idea thief. Tesla stole from Edison? That doesn't sound right. Guys, who is the artist for Come On a Baseball? Lydia, it's your song.
I don't know. Yeah, Salk?
Big Gigantic?
It's your song. Do you know?
Oh, it's Big Gigantic. I showed Heather the video of it last night. She was like, what did she say? Who's big? She didn't say gigantic. She like didn't read it right. She was like, gigante. She was like, who's big gigante?
Come on up, baseball, by Big Gigante.
You can see what goes on in the Salk household.
She doesn't listen to you, and when she does, she gets enough morsels to get it wrong. Great.
What's big gigante? All right, question number one. Enough of this ridiculousness this morning. Brock,
yes.
C.J. Anderson has had 1,000 yards. He's had a 1,000-yard season. He's available as a running back after being cut in Denver. Should they be bringing him in?
Yeah, I think, you absolutely bring him in. You bring in everybody anyway, so you absolutely bring him in. You see where this market's going to go. You are benefited by a very deep running back class. That is what is coming in this draft in 9 days. There's going to be running backs drafted in the first, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, and undrafted. So, unfortunately for CJ, getting released at this time, not ideal. But you bring him in, and you're going to see what kind of dough that he does want. 5 years in Denver, pretty durable. Last season, played every single game, had his 1,000-yard season. Now, he's a little dude. He kind of reminds me, to be honest with you, of a hard-running Justin Forsett. And Justin Forsett ran very hard, too. But, you know, CJ really trusts his power. He is 5'9", he's 225-plus. He's another Cal running back. And you know what else about him? If you trust Wikipedia, he loves Sonic the Hedgehog.
Hmm.
In fact, his fandom is off the charts. Wears shirts of it under his uniform jersey. We had some success with an eccentric Cal running back at this place.
True.
And actually, Justin Forsett was a pretty good player,
I thought
too.
That's who you're referring to.
No.
Oh.
So maybe the third time continues to be the charm, but I would absolutely bring him in and see what he wants financially.
All right, question number two. You know, one guy we haven't talked as much about is George Fant. He went through the huge transformation last year, really turned himself into a nice-looking football player, and then unfortunately blows out the knee. It's just really awful, and I really hope George is able to come back this year and compete for that right tackle spot. But in the meantime, who will have that same body type transformation this year?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Ethan Bosick, and you heard some whispers about that a few weeks ago. They got to work yesterday. I think when we see Ethan Bosick here in a couple weeks, when you know it's open to the media after their draft and their first little OTA, the organized team activity where they can compete and scrimmage and do some of that, I think we're going to look at Ethan Bosick and say, geez, he's really filled in. He took advantage of this offseason. You know, at LSU, he was a center. They want him a little lighter. He is so long at over 6 foot six, and he was a good student too. But now having to be a one-track mind, nothing but you eat and you lift and you grow and you develop, because you know if you add a little strength to your athleticism, get a good first rookie year, you can be great in this league. I think Ethan Bosick will be the guy that has transformed himself the most physically and mentally.
Can you just go home and, like, visualize what the Seahawks' body transformations might look like? You're just like, man, Ethan Bosick's going to be so chiseled. I can't wait.
I don't find that funny.
No? Nothing funny about that at all?
I'm not a body image guy like that at all.
All right, fair enough. Question number three. All right, Brock,
yes.
I think I know the answer to this question.
No, you don't, actually.
But who do you think is the most polarizing quarterback prospect in this draft?
It's been confirmed by three NFL dudes that I've talked to the last couple days. It's Josh Allen.
What?
Yes.
No.
The Josh Allen, this
Josh
guy.
Josh Rosen.
No, well, Josh Rosen.
It could be
is,
Lamar Jackson.
Josh Rosen.
There's actually some options.
It could be Baker Mayfield. I mean, that is the beauty of this draft.
It's Josh Rosen.
But as far as a guy that some people think is the number one pick in this draft, and I chatted with a former NFL quarterback yesterday. He's like, I couldn't take him in the first round. He doesn't see the field. Yeah, I'm great. You throw it 80 yards, but you have no command of what's going on at the line of scrimmage. He doesn't see it. He throws in the mid-50s from a completion percentage standpoint. And there's the guys that played the position, you know, not anybody else, but the guys that played the actual position have an awful lot of concern about Josh Allen and the way he plays the position. Add him to the list of a bunch of very polarizing prospects.
That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. All right. A lot of good texts coming in today. Not surprising. Uh-oh. Now Brock's finally embarrassed. Are you embarrassed by...
Of them just openly laughing at me?
Yeah.
While I'm trying to discuss
that
things?
More no.
Those calves. Mm. Those hips.
Hewitt Body Show.
Not at all. Not in the least. Mm. Not one bit.
I can't read this text on the radio. Howdy says I can, but I don't think I can. I would like to because it's very funny. So for the wherever the 910 is, great text. But I don't think I can read that one on the radio. I apologize. So, all right, let's see. Brock's draft profile is coming up at 8:30. Really good one today. This is one of those guys where I don't know whether they should draft him at number 18, and they probably won't. But if they do, there's no way I could be mad about it, even though I don't think they should do it.
He is an explosive dude.
Like, I really, really like watching him play, and I don't think they can draft him, but if they did, how could you possibly be mad? NFL draft, of course, just about, 9 days away. You can join us for the Seahawks Draft Lounge, live streaming through every pick of every round. Questions and picks and interaction, the whole deal, all at 710sports.com. All of us will be there in various ways, shapes, and forms. So the Seahawks Draft Lounge, find it starting Thursday the 26th on 710sports.com. All right, back to some baseball. We will get back to football as we bounce back and forth. Earl Thomas, according to Brock, did not report yesterday, was not available for the voluntary offseason workout. So no Earl Thomas yesterday. What does that mean for the future? We'll dig back into that at some point. But before we do, John Morosi, MLB Network, joins us for our regular Tuesday chat about the Mariners, who moved ahead of Houston yesterday. It's next on Brock and Salk.